Shanti, one of my favorite people in the world, Sister Janti. She is the additional administrative head of the Brahma Kumaris, which is a big job given how big the organization is. She was and still is responsible for UK, Europe, and Middle East, as well as the whole world, but especially. And she began her life with the Brahma Kumaris at a very young age. And she's one of the few who met Brahma Baba and spent time with Brahma Baba. She was asked to travel to London and accompany Daddy Janki. So she left India and accompanied Daddy Janki, our wonderful head of the organization for so many years, until she left her body at the age of 103. So Sister Janti was by her side for probably 50 years, almost 50, a long time. So she has learned firsthand, close up, many, many secrets. Spiritual secrets, those subtle things that you don't know until you witness it in action, and then you get a description. So she's an incarnation of wisdom, and for anyone who knows her, she is always gracious. Yeah? So please welcome our Sister Janti.
Om Shanti. Well, I hope to live up to that huge, huge introduction. Thank you, Judy. In fact, I have to say, I've known Daddy Janki since I was 8 years old. And that was a long time ago, more than 50 years ago, to be sure. But it was an amazing relationship and, in a way, continues till today. But the more important thing is the knowledge that's being shared with all of you here. Of course, each one will share it from their own particular perspective and experience, but the basic facts that are shared have come through the teachings that we received. So the knowledge are the teachings that have come, I won't say from Brahma Baba, the founder, but I would say through Brahma Baba, which means that Brahma Baba was the channel. And more about that in detail at a later time. But essentially, what you've understood is that the soul is eternal and imperishable. And there's a home where souls live, like a soul bank. And when souls come down here on the earth into this physical dimension and take on a physical body, then that starts a whole series of experiences within the human dimension. And we call this the drama. But the soul being eternal, imperishable, where does the journey begin and where does it end? And we talk about the spiritual being coming on a human journey. Upar wale karenge theek ya aap karenge? Okay, just mentioning to them. Yeah. So, a spiritual being on a human journey. And where does it begin? Where does it end? And how do you tie that in with the fact the soul is eternal and imperishable? So there's something there that never finishes, never ends. And when I had my first experience of the soul, it was this idea of this eternity, the eternal soul with no beginning and no end, just in a home of light. And that led me to understand a little bit more about the world cycle, drama, and how that functions. And if you were asked to draw an image of eternity, no beginning, no end, probably you'd come up with a design of a circle. No beginning, no end. And yet, within the beginning and the ending, there's also a start of the journey and a conclusion, but another start. And so where some spiritual souls have said that there's a spiral, and we go up and up and up and up, but at some point, if it's eternal, then that end and this end tie together. I hope I'm not going too quickly, because not only is it concepts, but it's also language. And so I'll try and remember to take it slowly. And so a spiral, if you connect up the two ends again, you actually have a form of a circle, a cycle. And when Brahma Baba had visions in the 30s that led him to start the Brahma Kumaris University, one vision was of the form of God as light. And you've been meditating with that awareness for a few days already. But another vision he had was a vision in which he saw this human world, the modern world, and then he saw the modern world go through a huge collapse. And it was harrowing for him. He was a man of great compassion. And so he had tears because he was seeing floods and earthquakes and hurricanes and all the sorts of things that we're hearing about today in terms of the natural disasters. But he saw this in the 30s. And then through all this upheaval, it was as if the earth became very quiet and still. And it was as if the earth had been through a huge renewal, and everything within the new earth was beautiful and fresh and green and sparkling and just wonderful. And then he saw what seemed to be stars coming from above, and as they came and touched the earth plane, they took on a human form. But the human form wasn't like bones and flesh. It was human, two arms, two legs, and so on. But it was as if they had been made out of light. They had costumes, bodies of light. And that light form was one in which, through which they were communicating, and a lot of their communication was just simply through the eyes. Their hearts were so clean and transparent that it was not necessary to hide anything. And so most of the communication was happening just simply through a glance, through their eyes. But when they did speak, it was as if it was music. And when they moved, it was a dance. And their relationship with each other was of trust, of love, and an exchange of joy. The relationship with all the animals and the birds and the bees seemed to be the same. And nature seemed to be there in abundance, sharing all her goodies with the human beings who were there. And he understood that what he was witnessing was a transition from the old world, which collapsed, to a new world, which was a new beginning. And he had to think very deeply about what all of this meant, because he also understood that he needed to be an instrument to make this new world happen. and he thought about it very deeply. And he finally came to the conclusion that this transformation, this transition could happen just simply through education, but not the education where you get degrees at university, but spiritual education. And through spiritual education, they would be able to understand the changes they needed to make from being human to again being spiritual beings, divine beings. And so that was the start of his journey and the creation of the Brahma Kumaris. And that story is a fascinating story, another time. But this is the start of the whole experience of eternity. Souls coming from that world into a world which is pure and clean and divine, experiencing life here on earth, on this planet, not somewhere up on the moon or Mars or Venus or somewhere, but very much here on this planet. But what he gradually understood also was that when you begin a journey, you start fresh and strengthened, you have a lot of energy, but as you continue with your journey, you gradually lose that power, just a little at a time, so that it's not even noticeable, until it comes to a point where really there's a big change that happens, a critical point. And so from that era, which in Hindi is called Sat Yug, the age of truth, so gradually the power of that pure, pristine truth gradually reduces, and you come to the next quarter. And within that, which is called Treta Yuga, three quarters. So three quarters of the power is still there, but one quarter has gone. And so Treta, three quarters still remains. And so life is still filled with love and joy. There's an exchange of whatever you have, mostly barter system. Everybody's healthy, everybody's happy. And this is because there's no sign of ego or anger or greed. Souls are in that absolute state of total purity. But that quality gradually diminishes. And yet still, three quarters are still there. And so that's the world that today we would remember as paradise, dream time. Different traditions have given it different names. The Garden of Eden. Different names according to the different cultures. But it's definitely an age that has been remembered in human awareness. And even though we see a very different world today, the memory of that world doesn't go away. It's there, deeply ingrained within the soul. But the journey carries on, and there's more power lost until we get to halfway through the cycle. But that becomes a very difficult, traumatic transformation from that era to the next, because so much power and purity has been lost that now, at this moment, our consciousness flips from spirituality to materialism. And so materialism isn't something that started 100 or 200 years ago. It started many thousands of years ago. But the critical change happens because of loss of power, spiritual power and loss of purity. And so instead of maintaining the consciousness of the light that I am, the light that I shine, I come into the consciousness of matter, materialism. And matter then takes over my consciousness. And so this identity, gender, age, position, possessions, all of these things take over my consciousness. And so from that moment on, all again the legends and the stories that we have from all our scriptures and our history in different ways, that's the time when Pandora's box opens up. It's the time when not just one Adam and one Eve, but it's the moment when paradise is lost. And so the banishment from the Garden of Eden. And it isn't that someone up there says, okay, out, but just a switch of consciousness. Instead of thinking of this, I'm now thinking of this. And so lust, anger, greed, attachment, ego, all of these negative forces have their base in the awareness of the body instead of the awareness of the soul being the master of the body. And so when the soul gets gradually more and more trapped in this awareness of negativity, things go from happiness to sorrow, things move from joy and pleasure into pain, things move from relationships into bondage. In Hindi, the two words are very connected, relationship, sambandh, and bondage, bandhan. You can see how the two words are related, but you move from a sweet exchange of give and take into a state of bondage because of ego, attachment, anger. All of those have their root cause in the consciousness of the body taking over. And we have messengers who come, different people at different times, Abraham, Buddha, Christ, Muhammad, Shankaracharya, later on Guru Nanak. Wonderful, amazing, powerful pillars for humanity. And they give messages that are important. But most times, instead of following the message, we begin to love the messenger. And so the messenger takes dominant place in our consciousness. And so the good words they teach us, the wisdom they share, very often gets ignored. And things become more and more ritualistic. Rather than understanding the essence of the message, we get into the detail and the message gets lost. And so rituals and the word of the scripture, rather than the significance of the scripture and the writing, takes over. And so things continue to come down. And that period, Dwapur, Dwa, duality, this division, instead of human working, the spirit working through the human form, it's now the human and the division. Spirituality is forgotten, religion comes into the picture, but religion and life become two separate things. So that gets relegated to once a week, or maybe once a month later on, maybe once a year in some cases today. So things just degenerate further and further. And the power of negativity continues to grow, and the power of a soul is gradually diminishing. And so three quarters around the cycle, we've lost three quarters of our power, and only a quarter remains. And then you see what we would describe as the history of the modern world, the state of conflict, the state of wars, all the evils and the sorrows that we can see, all of that just takes over more and more. And the word that they use for this last quadrant, Kali Yuga, the dark age, the age of death, the age in which Kal means time, Kal means machine, Kal means death, it has many connotations. And so that's the age in the last quadrant. Where do you think we are now? First quadrant? Second? Third? Fourth? First? Who thinks we're in the first? No one. I agree. Second? No one. Third? No one. Fourth? A few people are raising their hands. And yes, definitely we're in that age of darkness. Let me tell you, the words we use in English, they're not a direct translation of the Hindi, but they carry a lot of significance. So the first period, the golden age, it speaks for itself. But essentially, gold is that material that isn't tarnished by the air or water. I mean, you can use other acids and agents, but the normal things of nature don't harm it in any way. It maintains its beauty and its purity. And then the next period, the Silver Age. And yes, silver does get tarnished. Leave it exposed and within a short time it's no longer as beautiful as it was before. But a quick rub and usually it can be restored. And so the Silver Age, a little bit of the impact of the world out there, but not too much. Paradise still continues through the Silver Age. But that change that happens from spiritual awareness to material consciousness, that era is then called the Copper Age. And yes, copper does get affected to the point where it even changes color. And so the color of the soul has drastically changed. Color, I mean characteristics. And so, big change in that era. A lot of upheaval of nature also happening in that transition between the silver and the copper. Today we've seen the impact of human activity on nature. Can't deny that at all anymore. Even a few years ago, we would be challenged and say, no, all this is natural. Not true. The huge changes are human intervention. See, humans impact nature. Nature impacts humans, but the other is the first. Humans impacting nature. And so when human consciousness changes from divine, spiritual, to material, nature also goes through a lot of upheaval. Nature is responding to what's happening with human beings. Our anger, our ego, lust, greed, all of these things coming into the world mean that nature goes through a lot of change, turmoil. And this is why we don't have physical remnants of the golden and silver age. We have the stories, and then we said, oh, it's a myth, it's not real. But there's something within here that keeps reminding us of a time of purity and peace. And so the Copper Age begins, and the influence of matter on the soul, the consciousness coming into materialism, and a result of that then war, health, illness, the Pandora's box, everything gets opened up. And the forbidden fruit, normally you'd say knowledge is useful, knowledge is good. But what was it about the tree of knowledge and the apple that was forbidden? It was the consciousness of the body. In the golden age, silver age, I the soul shine. I am the master, not just of my physical body, but even of my inner senses. My mind is moving with discipline in the way I want it to move. I can move my mind, and my mind is able to move everything else around me. But the Copper Age, and now where I'm no more in charge of this or even my own mind, and so physical sensual pleasures come in and we get pulled into many wrong distractions, many wrong paths. But all of this intensifies as the purity of the soul gradually reduces. And you come to the Iron Age. Iron not only gets rusty, but the rust is poisonous. And so human contact very often now is toxic. And humans connecting with animals, and there's sheer violence. And humans connecting with nature, that's no more the case. We don't connect with nature. We think we have mastery over nature. We think we can exploit nature, which is what we've done for over 1,000 years. No more that sense of symbiosis, of working in harmony with other humans, other creatures, or nature itself. And so we come to the end of the cycle. And not only is it the Dark Age, not only is it the Iron Age, it's actually the age in which everything is topsy-turvy. Since 2016, we've been living in an era of post-truth. Agree? At the end of 2016, Oxford Dictionary told us that the new word that year, every year they have a new word, and that year the new word was post-truth. And Brexit happened, elections happened in the USA. I don't want to name names, but you'll understand. So we're at a time when literally everything is topsy-turvy. And there are descriptions written about this period in the scriptures that were written like thousands of years ago with the seers of that time. And maybe it was not just the vision of the future, it was also maybe a memory from the past cycle, because that's also recorded. You remember the story of the cycle? No beginning, no end. Yes, it's a journey, and so an end and a beginning, but yet in terms of the experience of the soul, it's been through this journey before. there's a recording that's there within the soul. There's tiny, 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 immeasurable point of light, no length, no width, no height, no breadth, and it exists. And yet, this tiny being has my whole story recorded within itself. I mean, just ponder on this one fact, and it's incredible how much memory do I have. And some of it is a tiny bit is conscious, some of it is subconscious, and some of it is totally unconscious, but it reveals itself in terms of my behavior. The way I think, the way I speak, the way I behave, all of that is opening up the story that I carry recorded within myself. And so when we see things that are happening today, put a newspaper here and put the Mahabharata scripture that's describing these details of the Iron Age together, and they match up. The violence, the selfishness, the greed, all those details have been described in those scriptures. And they say, these are the signs of extreme unrighteousness, the period of total unrighteousness. So from an era of truth, where Satyug, the age of truth, lasted for quite a while, and then we came to an era in which we understood truth, but we were no longer following it. And so we needed all the scriptures to tell us, this is what you should, this is what you shouldn't. But we ignored that. But today, some will say, well, there's no such thing as the difference between truth and falsehood. It's all the same. You can't label anything. I hear comments like that. But my own conscience tells me there is something which is real and there is something which is false. And so there is something which is true and there is something which is falsehood. And so today's era, not my label, post-truth, and it continues. And it's not going to finish so quickly until there's very drastic intervention. And the first intervention is the intervention of God's incarnation. And if all of this is just a story and a figment of imagination, absolutely fine, treat it as a story. But it's a pretty amazing story. And so God coming into a human body, and I would say that that would be Brahma Baba, awakening that soul and through him revealing information that we did not have access to before. If I take up just one aspect, the knowledge of Atma, soul. There isn't a scripture that can give you total, clear definition of what the soul is. And it's not just then somebody telling you, but experiment with it. Experience it. Check it out for yourself. In the laboratory of the mind, in silence, experiment and see for yourself how thoughts and feelings, short-term memories, and then conscience, understanding, and then the unconscious, the long-term memories, that are triggering my thoughts. You can see how all of this is working together in a cycle, another cycle in here. Truly, just take the time while you're here, and I'm sure there's lots of reflection time in your timetable, time for solitude, time to be contemplating these ideas and experimenting with these ideas. The people we call the dadis, how many of you ever met any dadi? Many of you did. And maybe you met one dadi, maybe you met all the dadis, and they were the people who surrendered in the 30s and then went through a period of intense meditation for 13 years from 1937 to 1950 in Karachi. First it was India, then it became Pakistan, but it was in Karachi basically, and then in Abu. And have they been to Pandav Bhavan yet? They have. Okay, so we came to Abu in 1950, and then we came to Pandav Bhavan, that particular location, around 55, 56. So for the first few years, we were in a couple of other places until we got that property. But for 14 years, these people were just experimenting in silence with what's going on in here and seeing how all of these things work together. So, you don't have 14 years, but maybe you can have a few hours each day. And maybe you can carve out time for yourself when you get back. Many of the places, many of the countries that you've come from have retreat places. And if they don't have a retreat place, they at least have centers. And take time to go there and visit the meditation rooms. But it's also an experiment you can do anywhere, wherever it is you are on your own. Just go deep inside and see how all of these things work together. So the knowledge that has been coming through Brahma Baba, knowledge of soul, knowledge of God, knowledge of karma, knowledge of time. You know, if somebody is unaware of time, then things go up and down. If you know how to move according to the time, then things are more likely to work out. If you want to have breakfast at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and some people have night shift duties, and so that's their timetable, but their body sync goes haywire after some time. So timing is very important. And so understanding where we are in terms of time in human history is absolutely vital. And so we are now at that period when things have reached a point of extreme unrighteousness and human energy can't put it right. If you think about entropy, and there's a closed system, you start with full capacity. Gradually, there's a loss of energy that's available. And when it comes to a point where all the available energy has been used, then it needs outside intervention to restore things back into balance. A very simple example. Your sitting room is nice and tidy at 8 o'clock in the morning. But what's it like by 10 o'clock at night? Probably a bit of a jumble. And either you or someone has to again give it energy to again put it back into order. And so the way things are today, a total state of chaos. Family life, the structures of religion, the economy, political life. It's a joke. It's a joke, isn't it? It really is. But a sad joke, because many, many are suffering because of all the chaos. And so at this point of chaos, chaos isn't going to settle itself automatically. It's the intervention of the divine through three things. When God intervenes in human affairs, the rest of the cycle, God doesn't intervene. I'll explain a bit more later. But the intervention of God is first to tell us what really is the truth. Human beings will always have limited perception. It's a fact. But the one who is outside of this cycle, the drama of life, up above, has the full information. And that information is what God comes to reveal about Creator, creation, and the whole history of humanity. And so, knowledge, that's the first step. But together with that, power. You can understand something, but if you don't have the power to put it through into action, you'll still be left in chaos. And so the understanding, the clarity is vital. But together with the clarity, you need that power to be able to make it practical, to implement it. And so God teaches us yoga. Yoga, union, the connection. So that we're able to draw the power of the Almighty within the soul and recharge the battery that had become totally empty. And so knowledge and yoga, both are absolutely vital. But the third ingredient, because God is the mother and the father, when they have hymns of praise of God in India, they speak of the mother and the father, because biologically that's how children experience the first experience for months and months in the womb, is the sustenance through the mother, direct sustenance. But even as a child, an infant, the sustenance first through the mother, but yes, also the father. And both are necessary. But the love that God gives us as mother and father, that is also absolutely vital in this whole story of transformation. So knowledge and yoga and God's love. These are the ingredients through which the soul that has become empty and dry and trapped by negativity is liberated from all of that and is able to return to its original, pure, golden state. That's God's work. What about us? We have to work with God. And so God gives me the knowledge. Am I ready to listen, understand, and practice? God teaches me yoga. Am I willing to experience the discipline it takes to focus my mind, connect with God, and draw that power, the love, parents' love is absolute. Today I know all relationships are pear-shaped, but the original relationship of the care, the protection, the sustenance, the nurture that comes from mother and father is unique. Have you ever calculated, as a mother or father, how much it costs you to have a child? You haven't bothered. You've taken it as part of your natural responsibility. You decide to have a child, and you know it's going to take time, energy, money. It's going to take all of this. But the natural instinct, you want to have a child. And you know that it's going to cost you all of that, but you still get into it. So my point that God's love as mother and father, or even as teacher and friend, or even as our guide, the Sadhguru, it's unlimited. But my response to that? Obedience. I need to understand what it is God expects of me and wants for me. God's expectations, again, are not for God, but God's love for us is that God would like us to come back to our original pure state so that we can be happy and healthy and wise once again. And so it's for our benefit, nothing that he needs from us, not at all. So it's a mutual connection then. And then from one individual, the knowledge goes to a circle, and from that circle, it reaches out into the world and becomes available for everyone. And it's made available totally freely, so that there's no tag on it, price tag. Why? You wouldn't be able to afford it. Nobody could afford the invaluable jewels that God gives. But on the other side, it's like the sunshine, available for everyone who wants to take it. And so, this period, a period of huge turmoil, the end of the old and the beginning of the new. So this is actually that period that we describe as the Diamond Age. Have a huge amount of gold and one diamond, and the price is equivalent. And so diamonds, just a tiny amount, but priceless, but also this period is the period which is actually the most powerful, the most important, the most valuable of all. Because this transition period, the confluence age, Diamond Age, this is the age in which we can now understand and know what's going on in here, and as a result of what's going on in here, we understand what's going on out there. Spirituality means inside out, understanding what's inside first, and then making sense of what's going on outside. The outside doesn't happen on its own. The creation of everything outside, whether it's situations or whether it's artifacts, big artifacts like a building, or little artifacts like these things. But the creation of all of that first takes place in here. Situations, they don't happen by themselves. They happen because something has been triggered in here, and that energy then makes things move out there. And so when I understand this principle, and I start experimenting with silence, the connection with the divine, and emerging what I understand to be there, latent within the soul. What I mean is the original qualities that we brought with ourselves when we came into the golden age. Those qualities are there within the soul. Divine virtues, purity, compassion, goodness, truth, it's all there. What I now have to do is to allow all of this to emerge. Think about a seed. And when the seed is planted, the right conditions, the right season, the right time, the right water, the sunshine, all of that, then whatever is within the seed is able to germinate and blossom. Same thing, within I, the soul, I have all those qualities of the golden age within myself. God's light, God's love provide the ingredients, the energy with which I can now finish all the negativity and also emerge and express all the goodness that lies within. And so this period is truly, truly the most amazing period of all. I see all the suffering, I see all the crazy things, but I can be detached from that. And through that detachment, detachment doesn't mean non-engagement, but through that inner detachment in which I know I am separate from what's going on here, I'm seeing it, but now in that awareness of detachment, I can do what is needed to move things in the right direction. And they may all change instantly, probably they won't, it'll take time, but not such a long time. But in that awareness of the drama, this is an unlimited drama. The whole planet is our stage, and we're all actors playing a role. And in one lifetime, we play many roles. But in each and every one of our other lifetimes, we played many roles also. And all that recording is in here. So at this period of transformation, we can come back to our highest state of perfection. Sounds good? Experiment with it and see for yourself. For there's also a moment when we return home. Our effort to come back to perfection, and then we journey home to that world of infinite light. And then, you remember the story I shared right at the beginning of stars coming down to play their role on the world stage? That's the next step. And so we go through the cycle and we go home, have a short rest, free from any action, free even from thinking, just being, just purity and silence. But then we come into the world of activity once more, but with no trace of any bondage and no sorrow or any suffering. a lot to take in, and many, many questions, I can imagine. So I know that there is a Q&A that's being planned at another time. But also I'd like to continue with this topic in another way tomorrow. And maybe then we can have some questions at that point. What I'd like us to do now is to have a meditation in which we go through that experience of the cycle. And if it's a story, that's fine. Just treat it as a story. If it's more than a story, explore it. Sitting quietly, I come to the awareness of the light that I am. I am the light. I am peace. As I feel that peace in the soul, the peace reaches out through my entire physical frame, and the body relaxes and is at peace. And now I connect with the Divine, the Supreme, the Being of Light. And the Supreme pulls me out of the consciousness of matter and carries me to my home, a world of light. God's home is my home also. The world of purity and peace. And in my home, with my parent, there is freedom. I am totally free. But the thought emerges, I want to taste the happiness of the human world. And the thought propels me out of my home and I come into a world of matter. I enter a costume that has been prepared for me. And in a short time, I am welcomed by parents who love each other, but also love me. life is filled with joy and love. When each day passes as in a dream, each day filled with fresh wonder and beauty and experiences pure, pure love. My interaction with my friends as I grow is an exchange of joy. We laugh and we sing and we dance. There's no fear of the animals, neither from our side nor from theirs. So we play together. The flowers have colors that are like jewels. They radiate light. The fruits are luscious, waiting to be shared with all. The water is filled with the fragrance of the herbs that it has traversed. We create poetry, we create music, we create things of wonder. There comes a moment when I lose that power, I lose that purity, and when sorrow touches me, a memory deep in my heart tells me there is someone up above who can help me, and I turn to that one. But I search for truth, but I'm confused. I don't know what is real and what is truth. I experiment with many paths, many systems, but things seem to get darker and darker. When I find myself in the night, not knowing where to turn or what to do, God's grace reaches me and I awaken. God's love touches me and my intellect opens up to see myself and to see my mother and father. And in this awakening, I can now see my whole story. I see the past, long, long ago. And the immediate past. And I realize I am who I am because of all that I've been through. But now, at the present, I also understand what I need to do myself but also my near and dear ones. What is it that I can do for them? And the world, is there something I can do for the world? I begin to understand. And I know that a future is whatever I choose for myself. Whatever other seeds that I plant today will determine my future story. But at this moment, the deep longing that I had to experience the divine is being fulfilled. God's love in all relationships is coming to me. I just simply need to focus and fill myself. God wants to see me shining like a diamond, a flawless diamond. And this is also my heart's desire. This is what I want also. And this is the time that God can make it happen if this is what I choose. I hold this awareness of who I am, who I belong to, and what it is that I need to do. When I come back from this journey, back to the physical dimension, onto the world stage, to take my physical costume and do what I need to do here. Om Shanti.